This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. Time now for a look at our top stories here on Friday. And in one of the worst-kept secrets in Washington over the past year or so, Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens says he will be calling it quits at the end of the court's current term, meaning he will leave the bench either in late June or early July once the court's final decisions of this session have been rendered. The President of the United States got the letter from Stevens this morning, and an early afternoon out in the Rose Garden, the President paid tribute to one of the longest-serving justices in American history.
During that tenure, he has stood as an impartial guardian of the law. He's worn the judicial robe with honor and humility. He has applied the Constitution and the laws of the land with fidelity and restraint.
Stevens will be turning 90 years old later this month, and by the time he retires, will be the third longest-serving Supreme Court justice in American history. As for his legacy on the court, the president obviously gave one version of what many people think of his time on the bench. Other people see things very differently. They don't see restraint. They see judicial activism from the left side of the political aisle. Among the cases that Stevens wrote the majority for in recent years included a major case involving Guantanamo Bay detainees. In the majority opinion, he said that the Bush administration could not indefinitely hold prisoners taken captive during the war on terror. He also ruled against military tribunals, saying that the Geneva Conventions forced the United States to charge and put on trial those being held at Guantanamo Bay. That same year, Stevens also wrote the majority decision on a 5-4 ruling that gives the Environmental Protection Agency the power to declare carbon dioxide a pollutant and therefore give the EPA the right to regulate the gas, something that we have obviously seen as the energy debate has progressed here in Washington. And that is exactly what the EPA is promising to do if, in fact, the Senate does not go along with the cap-and-trade energy bill being pushed by the Obama administration. Stevens was also reliably pro-choice on the bench and was also a major voice in the Lawrence v. Texas majority decision, which banned state laws against sodomy and paved the way for the legal challenges to enact gay marriage in many different states around the country. Stevens most recently has issued a stinging dissent in the controversial Citizens United versus the Federal Elections Commission ruling, in which basically many restrictions were lifted on who could participate in political advertising during a campaign season. Stevens also, of course, among the four dissenters in the Bush v. Gore decision following the 2000 presidential election. So now the job in front of President Obama, of course, is to nominate a successor for Justice Stevens. The president says he plans to do so in swift order so that whoever the replacement is can be in place when the new session starts in October.
It is in the best interest of the Supreme Court to have a successor appointed and confirmed before the next term begins. And so I will move quickly to name a nominee, as I did with Justice Sotomayor.
And once again, the president stirring some waters by listing his qualifications for a new Supreme Court justice. Some are the traditional criteria, others a little different.
An independent mind, a record of excellence and integrity, a fierce dedication to the rule of law, and a keen understanding of how the law affects the daily lives of the American people. It will also be someone who, like Justice Stevens, knows that in a democracy, powerful interests must not be allowed to drown out the voices of ordinary citizens.
One of the longest-serving Senate Republicans is Orrin Hatch of Utah, former chairman of the Judiciary Committee, which will oversee the nomination. But the chairman now, of course, is Vermont's Patrick Leahy. Senator Hatch says he's a little bit concerned about the nominee that might be coming down the pike here. He says the president has nominated many radical activists to lower court positions.
President Obama has already picked some of the most activist judicial nominees that I've seen in my 34 years in the Senate. And I hope he doesn't try to do the same to the Supreme Court.
On to other news today. Another major retirement, this one in the House of Representatives. Michigan Democratic Congressman Bart Stupak will not run for a 10th term. Stupak was relatively unknown outside of his northern Michigan district until earlier this year when he became a major player in the health care debate, threatening to stand in the way of passage of the health care reform bill unless he and several other Democrats got assurance that there would be language in the bill that would ban taxpayer funding of abortion. In the end, that didn't happen, but he was promised an executive order to do the same from President Obama, and Stupak and his fellow pro-life Democrats then voted for the bill, although many scholars have pointed out that an executive order cannot override a piece of congressional legislation. As a result, Stupak was facing a torrent of opposition at home from the pro-life community as well as from many independents. Several different Republicans had entered the race with a lot of money already flowing in from the National Republican Party. Today, Stupak said he's stepping down, says it's not because of the fierce criticism that he's heard, and it's not because of even a handful of death threats that he's received. He says he's not worried about potential Republican opposition. He just says he's accomplished what he went to Washington to accomplish, and he's ready to move on to other challenges in life. As a result, the race is now considered a toss-up by many, whereas Stupak probably would have been a slight to significant favorite had he stayed in the race. Back to President Obama now, and in addition to commenting on the retirement of Justice John Paul Stevens on Friday, the president also once again issuing his condolences to the many families and friends affected by the major disaster at the Upper Big Branch Mine in Montcoal, West Virginia.
I want to offer my deepest condolences to the friends and the families of the fathers and the husbands and brothers, nephews and sons who were killed in this accident. I'm also in awe of the courage and selflessness shown by the rescue teams who've risked their lives over and over and over this week for the chance to save another.
Obama also let it be known on Friday that he plans to investigate this, and he also says there are some major changes probably coming as a result of this tragedy.
Their government and their employers know that they owe it to these families to do everything possible to ensure their safety when they go to work each day. When I was in the Senate, I supported the efforts of Senator Byrd and Rockefeller to try to improve mine safety, but it's clear that more needs to be done.
While additional mining safety regulations may be coming, the National Republican Party meeting in New Orleans this week at the Southern Republican Leadership Conference, and there some of the highest profile figures in the party are taking aim at President Obama and his agenda in Washington, as well as the road to victory potentially later this year and even in 2012. Among those speaking, former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, who says the president's slogan of "Yes, we can" is true in a sense.
Yes, we can spread the wealth around. Yes, we can spend money that we do not have on programs that we don't need, and we're going to stick the next generation with the bill. To a lot of us, that's stealing.
But as Democrats try to keep their majorities in Congress later this year, they will be most likely branding the Republican Party, or at least trying to, as the party of no for their nearly unanimous opposition to much of the Obama agenda. Newt Gingrich, the former House Speaker, says the GOP could brand themselves as the party of yes.
Republicans can say yes to a balanced budget through controlled spending. Republicans can say yes to more jobs through tax cuts. There are many things that we can say yes to. And if we would discipline ourselves to start out every conversation, whatever the news media asked us, and however the left attacks us, our first answer should be, let me tell you what I'm for.
On the interview front at week's end, head to worldnetdaily.com and dateline.radioamerica.org. There you'll hear my conversation with Jonathan Williams of the American Legislative Exchange Council. He, along with economists Art Laffer and Stephen Moore, have put together a new report called Rich States, Poor States, and we'll find out why some states are thriving while others are languishing badly. You'll also hear my conversation about government waste with Tom Schatz of Citizens Against Government Waste. Pajamas Media CEO Roger Simon explains why he thinks the Democrats are the party that's using race to divide this nation. And you'll hear my conversation with Ryan Conklin, an Iraq war veteran, about his new book describing his time in service to this country. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.